Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. And this is me, your host, Yag. In today's episode, we are going to discuss how to better market cybersecurity products and, more importantly, break the myths around it. As always, we have the best in business joining us to share their expertise. Today, we have with us Rafi Ozik, the founder and CEO of Privatize, all the way from Israel. Privatize is disrupting cybersecurity with one-click enterprise network security for distributed and remote network. Privatize puts all company devices behind a virtually impenetrable cloud network called the ROC, which stands for Remote Office Cluster. And having known Rafi, and as an external observer, I can certainly say that he is building an amazing company and probably is among the top companies to watch out for, especially the ones that come out of Israel. And when Privatize becomes a unicorn, remember that you heard it from the ABM Conversations podcast first. With that, Rafi, welcome to the show. It's been long due and here we are. How's it going?
Yeah, everything's good. Thank you for having me and I very much appreciate that.
All right. So let's get started. You know, I have worked in the cybersec space long ago, sometime in 2012, and I was certainly not the best marketer for that space. But if my memory serves me right, I think for a long time, the cybersec market has been driven by fear. If there is a news about some big hack or a security compromise, you can almost be certain that every other company in the space is going to churn out a blog or a video related to the news and plugging in their product as a preventive measure. So can cybersecurity even be marketed for its benefits, or is it always going to be seen as a pain reliever?
Yeah, you know, fear, I think, is always going to be more or less the primary motivator, right? So it's very easy and to want to market with fear, right? For any product. But the issue with cybersecurity is that a lot of companies, no matter what happens, it's not enough to market with fear because they don't necessarily really believe that they're going to be hit. And right. And on top of that, by adding an additional thing, something to run towards, something positive, you do both. You are differentiating yourself from other companies, that it's not just fear. And there's a tremendous amount of productivity, especially with remote and distributed work, that by securing the workforce wherever they are, you're allowing your company now to really expand its horizons, work from a lot of different locations. It gives a lot of freedom and flexibility of what you can do. So that's kind of what we also push, is the productivity aspect of it and the accounting aspect of it too. You know, you do accounting because maybe the government regulates and you have to do accounting, but it's extremely helpful to your business to have accounting and to be able to forecast and be able to know how much money do you expect to make the next year? How much did you make the previous quarter? What are your expenses? What is your income? You know, it's not just about regulations. It's about also helping your company grow, right? Accounting does that. It's the same thing with cybersecurity. When you're activating zero trust network access, when you're locking down resources in general, and when you're adding all of these tools, you're also getting insight into your company, what is being used, who needs to use it, and you're creating order. So I definitely believe fear is probably always going to be a big part of any kind of marketing push, but there's this big optimistic and positive thing of the productivity, additional benefits that it could give your company, which is something we really focus on as well.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. And I think it's also about the brand narrative that most security companies take, right? So when the cloud started becoming mainstream, a lot of cybersecurity companies were against it. And I remember myself writing articles against it based on the stance that my company took back then. All right. So here's the next thing that I would love for you to share your take on. Now, in the current world as we operate, we are all working remotely. And in fact, my current organization, it's the fact that I'm the only one working from Chennai. So how do you encourage companies and help them see the ROI and make them invest on securing remote workers as part of their cybersecurity budget?
Yeah, well, of course, as a marketing approach, you know, the low-hanging fruit, right, is you just have compliance regulations, you have cyber insurance, you have a lot of things that companies have to secure in order to pass, aside from everything else. But then the other aspect is that peace of mind, which is that they need to cover themselves. And, you know, even companies that don't have these kind of regulations, I have my workers working from home, and I need to make sure that I'm doing the minimum, that we're not going to be hit some huge ransomware attack that easily could have been prevented, right? And there's more and more awareness now about that prevention. You know, unfortunately, sometimes companies come and they've already been hacked, and that's sometimes the reason that they're coming. But really getting people the awareness out there, the big companies now really have it. And of course, it's starting to come more towards the small and medium sized companies as well, that they need to have things in place. And we help them along. We help them show how easy it is to do prevention, how important it is. You know, our whole thing is it's in one click, right? So by making it no hassle, it's a lot easier to now deploy, you know, which is more than the money. It's just companies don't want to have this huge hassle. So that's making it as easy as possible for them to implement is very important in cybersecurity.
Right, right. So what actually is that, you know, like say, just for our listeners to understand a little more, because majority of our listeners are B2B SaaS marketers and salespeople. And because everybody is working remote, what is the part that we are actually talking about when we say securing remote workers?
So there's two parts to it, right? So there's your computer or your phone or itself, the apps on it. But then what we secure and what is the bigger issue, in my opinion, is the network itself. You're connected to the internet. You're connected to maybe other devices on your internal network. You're connected to cloud resources. You know, how do you secure all of those connections while people are working remotely from insecure networks, right? That's the challenge. So what Privatize does is we are in the industry that's called now SASE, Secure Access Service Edge. And basically it's from wherever you work, it puts you on that same virtual network that's secure. We do it a little bit differently than other companies. We have something called the Remote Office Cluster. We like to say it's not just SASE, it's Rock SASE. right. But yeah, exactly. And the idea behind it though is that wherever the people are, we put them on that same network. And that's really the idea. Is, you know, B2B marketers, we're marketing this idea that wherever they are, they're sharing the same network. They're connected to this, they're able to connect to whatever they were able to connect to previously while in the office, and now do it totally securely, you know, wherever they are. And you don't have to worry about the fact that they're coming from these insecure networks and things like that. So it really gives them all this flexibility. And of course, now you also have insight into exactly what people are doing. You're going to be setting up access rules, who has access to what. So it gives your organization, you know, it's like house cleaning a little bit. There's a nice feeling behind it as a business. You say, well, what applications do we have in the cloud? What do we have internally in our own offices that need to be connected to? Who should have access to it? You know, these are things you should be doing, which is not connected to whatever tool you're using. You should just have this stuff. You should know this stuff anyway, right? And this the tool kind of helps you guide you through that process and then secure all of your remote workers. And in our case, we also can secure in the office as well. So we do have companies that use Privatize both in the office, out of the office for people with distributed work, which is also distributed, and of course for people using it for remote workers.
You know, one of the things that I love with respect to knowing all these tools is it's also kind of having an audit of the tools that you use. And one of the things in the SaaS community is that we tend to subscribe to a lot of tools, and at some point we don't even clearly remember which of the ones we have subscribed to, are we using it or not? So yeah, I think this makes a lot of sense. But let me also ask you a quick question here. Like, does it overcomplicate when a typical situation of BYOD comes in? That is, bring your own device.
Yeah, it heavily complicates things with bring your own device, because now you have an issue where if they're using their bring your own device from home, they're sharing it possibly with other people in the family.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what's put on that device. There's another issue, which is that you can't necessarily force them to have security stuff on it all the time. You know, it's the same thing with the smartphones. You know, it's this weird thing. They're using it for company stuff. They're using it for home stuff. So we work with bring your own devices very heavily in making sure that, you know, the app, they can control, you know, certain things. They have to be connected to the app to use. And we give a lot of flexibility in terms of How locked down do they make the app, you know, the different settings, and how are you going to use it for, you know, maybe you'll use it differently for in the office and a bring your own device and an office computer. You know, for a bring your own device, you might not want it to always secure all that traffic. You might only want to secure traffic if it's connected to office related things, right? So there's a lot of ways that we work around that to make it work for bring your own device. And it's important because a lot of companies do have that. That being said, out of the box, we always recommend for companies to buy office computers for their employees. It's not a huge expense in the scheme of things, and it's much more secure. As much as you can secure bring your own devices, it's better for them to have a dedicated computer that, you know, is really only for office work.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And as a next jump off point, what I'm going to ask you is, I mean, something that you already answered in a part, but do you really, really believe that cybersecurity can literally move from being a threat mitigator to a productivity tool that we spoke about? At least from my point of view, I would rather say that, you know, if I can at least think about all my cybersecurity software as something that gives me a peace of mind, then I would say that it's certainly an opportunity to create a huge category there. So what do you think about something like that?
Well, a big part of privatize and, you know, products like ours is the zero trust element.
Sounds more like blockchain kind of a concept.
Yeah, well, what zero trust is access control, right? What it's saying is that who can access what resources and from where, specifically zero trust network access. And that is a huge productivity tool. First of all, it's just enabling remote work. Now I can work remotely and I connect safely to the cloud. I can connect safely to resources in the office, like an office server or what's called a domain controller. And on top of that, like we spoke about earlier, now it's forcing the business to create an inventory of what employees need access to what, right? The minimum privileges for the employees, you know, who really needs access. And they might even find, hey, we have some of these SaaS products that we don't even really need at all. You know, They're just security issues. You know, there's all it does is give us another vulnerability, but we don't actually need this product, right? So it's a really nice in terms of giving that inventory, giving that accounting, increasing the productivity of people who are working remotely now are able to work remote, right? Because essentially, if you're not secure, you can't work remote. It's just too dangerous for the business. You know, the chance of having some major hack on your business when you're just letting people insecurely connect from insecure networks is just, you almost can't work remotely in that case. So it's just enabling remote work and then giving you all of that accounting, and it's a big productivity boon for businesses in that case.
Right. And here's another thing about marketing a cybersecurity product. And at least here's what I found working back in the day. I was never an IT management person or an InfoSec person at heart. In fact, I used to use InfoSec and CyberSec interchangeably most of the time. What I mean is, as a marketer, I never really related to the lifecycle or priorities of someone working in security or networks. But the true challenge is, if you have to get a buy-in for your product, which typically comes top-down when it comes to enterprises, you want everybody to understand the seriousness of a security threat, or at least they need to know what they're investing on in terms of cybersecurity. So how do you simplify something that is so very technical in a way that everyone understands? I mean, if I go to a website that offers cybersecurity products, I don't even feel like I'm reading English there.
Yeah, and I think that part of that is almost on purpose. You know, for example, SASE is not a term that was created by IT people. It was created by a company called Gartner, right? It's kind of like a top-bottom term. And a lot of things in cybersecurity is like that. It's very big companies come out with terms and push it very, very hard. And it's very unintuitive. It's very kind of a select group of people are kind of really understand it or are involved in it. And then it kind of is pushed out to the general public. One thing that we do is certain things like SASE has become such a popular term lately that we start using it more. But we generally try not to use terminology from the IT world at all. So we might not even say zero trust. We'll just say this is access control. When we explain the fact that this is, you know, a virtual network, you know, we explain, you know, we have an agent. It's put on any device. It puts all that devices on our remote office cluster virtually. They don't have to understand how it works. They just have to know that now it's no longer on your home network. It's now on virtually impenetrable remote office cluster, right? And people get that. It's like, okay, I'm in a different network now. I'm now sharing an office network, you know? They don't have to know how it works. And I think the most important thing is you don't have to use, unless you're speaking with someone who you know knows the kind of terminology. They know what zero trust is, they know what SASE is, they know what CASB is, they know all these terms. Great, use them. If not, break it down to something easy. You're not using zero trust, you have access control to the cloud or to certain internal resources. And when you say the cloud, make it very clear. I'm controlling access to Salesforce. Only certain people could get in, not even with username password. In other words, I'm locking this down only to certain IP addresses. I'm locking this down only to certain devices that even before it asks for your username password, you need to meet certain criteria to get in. You know, you just break things down in a way that people could understand and stay away from all the terms and things like that, unless you're speaking with someone who you know knows them, right? Because then they're helpful.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So that begs another question as to who are the typical buyers of cybersecurity products? Is it generally the security admin, somebody who takes care of all these access controls, passwords, or is it the typically every IT company, or every company has an IT desk that centrally manages all this patches and updates and everything? So who's the one who typically starts a conversation with you?
Yeah. So when we're dealing with a small or small, medium sized company, they're generally going to be using something called a managed service provider. They're going to be doing an outsourced IT company is going to be handling.
Right.
So we'll be generally selling through the outsourced IT. And then with the bigger companies, we'll generally be speaking with the CISO there, the chief information security officer. In some companies, it might be the CTO, with some SaaS companies and things like that. And, occasionally, in my case, because we are a startup, and the way that I guess unconventionally sometimes reach out, I might even be speaking with a co-founder of a company. So that's generally the people. But you're generally speaking about outsourced IT, or if it's in-house, it's going to be with the CISO is going to be starting the conversation.
Right. That makes sense. And here's a typical startup kind of a question. How do you compete with large enterprises that are extremely highly funded and have huge marketing budgets? Because the way I see Privatize over the last 1 year or so, you have quickly become a brand that is definitely recognized in that circuit. So how did that happen, and how do you compete with the bigger brands?
Yeah, no, it's been really an incredible journey so far. We spun off from a different company and totally, pivoted to this, the SASE and created the remote office cluster, everything in August of last year. And one of the things that you have to do as any kind of small company, this isn't just a startup thing, it's any kind of small company, depending on your budget. If you have a small budget, you cannot market like a company with $1 billion budget, because you'll just run out of money, right? You'll run out of money in a second, because they have a branding strategy. They have a whole thing that they can do. They could set things over a period of years. They already have a CERN, right? That's a big mistake. You can't go into the same channels that a $1 billion company is using if you are a small company. But there are some things that you have the advantage of as a startup that big companies don't have. One of the very important things, and I don't see this enough with other startups, I see a lot of reliance on just, you have to immediately get huge amounts of funding and be like a huge company. But sometimes to start and to get out the door, this especially in the beginning, but throughout, the CEO is the number one salesperson of the company.
Absolutely.
Very, very important that the CEO, it's not just about having a vision. It's not just about managing. It's not just about managing your developers and dealing with hiring and strategy. Most importantly, in the very, very beginning, is sales. And as a CEO and a founder or a co-founder, people will speak to you, that they might not speak to the account executives, but people want to speak with a founder or a co-founder. Like this conversation, Yak. We have this conversation, we spoke over LinkedIn, and I'm very impressed with your podcast. You have an incredible podcast, and you probably wouldn't have me on if I were just an employee of a very small company, right? So that's something that's very important as a CEO and as a founder. You have to be very involved in pushing your brand, in getting in front of people, in networking yourself, and in making connections yourself with the proper customers, with the people yourself to get your first get in the door with those first customers. And even I would say try to get on podcasts like this, right? And all that stuff. That's what I would say is a big part of it. And generally, you're going to want to do things, you know, you're also going to be very heavily reliant on maintaining those relationships with those customers, getting referrals from those customers. It's super, super important, right? All the things that don't cost millions of dollars to do, you know, referrals are free, you know, reaching out to someone over LinkedIn is free. So those are kind of like the things that I would say, you know, have worked, you know, in the past. I think that Salesforce built their company in the beginning over cold emails, you know, and I wouldn't necessarily say just the idea of cold emails, but that whole world of directly reaching out and building relationships is still relevant in 2021.
Right. Yeah, I agree with a lot of things that you said, especially, you know, I definitely agree with the founder-led reach out, because the best part about a founder talking with a prospect or a customer is that you're not only obsessed about selling your solution, but you're really, really obsessed whether your product is solving for the pain point of a customer. And the discussions are more often around the pain points, and the focus and the belief and trust is already built, because the emphasis is like, how can I model this in a way that it solves for your problem? And that comes, you know, over a period of time, that is something that can be transitioned to your first sales hire or somebody who comes into the team. And that becomes the sales DNA of the entire organization. So I absolutely love that.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Awesome. So that brings us to the next section of the podcast, which we call the rapid fire section. And this is more like a lightning round where I'll shoot 5 pointed questions at you. The questions might be short, the answers need not be. So you can go with the flow. The idea is to, for me, is to try and put you on the spot, and let's see, it's going to be fun. So are you ready for it?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
All right. So here's question number one. What do you say to someone who tells you, you know what, VPN is dead?
Yeah, it is not dead. Yeah, I would say when people say the VPN is dead, what they're referring to is VPNing into a piece of hardware in an office. And yeah. That is dead. But VPNing now, utilizing the cloud and utilizing a lot of new technology and functionality and a mixer of some older technologies is definitely not dead. And Secure Access Service Edge and SASE is built on top of VPN technologies. And most of the companies that are marketing the VPN is dead are still built off of VPN protocols at their core.
That's amazing. All right. So here's question number two. If you're going to be hiring a marketer for your team, what specific role would your first hire be and why?
You know, keep it honest to the extent, obviously, marketing is sometimes a little exaggeration, but, if, you know, probably more content writing and branding and things of that nature.
So any specific reasons to pick content first?
Well, I think that content comes hand in hand with branding, you know, the kind of content you're going to be writing and how are you going to get your, you know, the kind of language you want to get across and put how you want to specify. And I think that kind of starts with content and then it moves over to, you know, imaging and videos and everything else. But first you want to get kind of your story and the way you want to brand yourself. I think that content, it starts with words, right?
Right. Makes total sense. All right. So here's question number three. Here's something that you often say, and I really loved reading that. So you say that if you give up privacy for security, you will neither have security nor privacy. So can you expand that on a little bit, please?
Yeah. No, I've seen you've done your research.
Yeah. I love doing that.
Yeah. Well, you know, what that was specifically related to is something called SSL decryption. So basically what companies sometimes do is they will monitor your encrypted traffic. And for your users there, what encryption is it takes any, you know, you're going over to, let's say, you're sending your doctor a message, right, over HTTPS. So that message should only be visible by the website that your doctor is using and yourself, right? No one in the middle should have access to that. Yeah. And what companies often do is they use something called SSL decryption. And what they do is they, without getting into the technicalities of it, they take that data and they will actually inspect it and they will see it. They will decrypt it, right? For employees. Now, they'll often have rules that it's not going to be health-related data and it won't be this data and so on and so forth. But it's sometimes not a lot, you know, implemented properly. And now the issue is that what they're doing is something called a man in the middle. So they have, they're now in between where you and the doctor's website, the company is actually intercepting it, decrypting it, and reading that data. And they're doing it to make sure there's no malware, to make sure there's nothing bad inside of it. And it's a whole history of how it came about. There were these next generation firewalls. They became not as usable with encryption. And then this became a solution, which was essentially a hack. The problem is that what that does is now you have a whole nother vulnerability in your networks. Because now if someone hacks into this middle, right, or there's an employee who goes bad or something like that, there are people now who have access to this confidential data that shouldn't, you know, so it's trying to stop malware, but now you're opening up this whole other security hole now of bad actors and hackers or right. bad employee can now get access to all this kind of data. So us as a company, as a rule, up to now, we don't do SSL decryption at all. So we focus a lot on statistical analysis. We look at what specific kind of websites people are going to, something called DNS filtering that we do at a very high level. We try to do things in a way that doesn't require, you know, infiltrating and intercepting data and doing decryption and things that we don't have any access to private data with Privatize. It's very, very important to us as a company. That's where that comes from. We don't think that's good practice. And frankly, we think it should end.
Yeah, I love this. I think it also goes back to your other statement where you talk about half of cybersecurity is all about the human touch that is involved on the internal side of companies. Yeah, totally with you on that. All right, so here's question number four. What is one question that you would want every cybersecurity founder to ask themselves today before starting an organization?
Well, I think they should ask themselves, is there a real need for the product that they're looking to make, right? Would be the just a simple, it's not related to cybersecurity. I think anyone starting a market, anything, right? Just
so is it more about like the need in sense, like the current relevance or like the problem they are solving or what is your core?
Well, I think for us, it's about, this is in our case, this was a very specific thing. You know, Privatize was built almost by our customers because it started, you know, Privatize was part of a different company as what's called a managed VPN. And we were working some smaller customers with something and working it out. And people were starting to ask us for this secure access service edge. And they weren't calling it that, but they were saying they wanted access control, they wanted DNS filtering, they wanted encryption, they wanted a lot of things that we started to add. And some of the proprietary stuff and some of the advantages and advancements that we made over other things really came from the customers. So when I spun off Privatize and took it over and we launched it in August, I knew there was demand. We had customers even before the product was ready.
That's an amazing situation to be in.
Yeah. It definitely is. And I think that's really important because you get a lot of, it's hard to do a startup, but you get so much motivation when people are using your product. So making sure you have, trying to really see to the, you might have to pivot, but trying, you know, the most important thing is trying to figure out the market and the needs of what you're doing. And it's not really to cybersecurity, it's anything. I think that's the most important thing. You know, what are you really adding value, right? Because ultimately the goal, right, is you're going to be asking people to pay for this thing that you're making, you know, and you want to make sure that you're making something that people value and want. So that's something that's definitely the first question I would say to ask.
Amazing. Love that. All right. So here's the final rapid fire question. So what, according to you, is the biggest myth that people have when it comes to marketing cybersecurity products?
Well, I think the biggest myth that people have is that you need to be a big brand and that people are not willing to use you if you're not a big brand or backed by big brands. You know, that's a myth. You don't have to be known in cybersecurity. You just have to be able to give the customer the peace of mind with whatever they need in order to trust you. So you just have to give them whatever access they need, you know, whatever logs they need, whatever they need in order to say, hey, this is a trustworthy product. But you don't have to be a brand. You don't have to be backed by a huge brand, even to get in with to start conversations with enterprise companies and enterprise CISOs.
Wow, that's a highly relieving information to even hear. I'm absolutely loving this. All right, so we are coming towards the end of our episode today. But before I say my thank yous and before I let you go, I would like to ask you if there is a parting message that you would like to share with our audience. And our audience are predominantly B2B marketers and sales folks from the SaaS part of the world. And you know, these are typically people with 7+ years of experience all around the globe.
I would just say, you know, don't be afraid to get into the cybersecurity space a little bit. You know, if you're not involved in it, you know, just start reading up a little about it as a marketer. And even if you don't have IT experience, I would say don't be afraid to start getting you know, rolling up your sleeves and learning about it a little bit if that's something that interests you. It seems very, very complicated from the outside, but once you start getting a feeling of the basics, it's kind of the same concepts that come up over and over again.
Awesome. All right. So I think you also motivated me to take a deeper look on cybersecurity as well. So that's amazing. And for the listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best place to you know, connect with you? And what are some of the reasons that people can connect with you for?
Yeah, well, if you want to connect with me, if you're interested, maybe potentially down the line of, you know, joining the company as a marketer or in sales. If you're interested in some kind of partnership, you know, of course, your marketing thing. If there's anyone who's, you know, happens to be a CISO who's interested in sales who's listening to this, you know, you could always reach out to us for a product itself. You could look me up, Rafi, R-A-F-I, and Ozick, O-Z-I-C-K on LinkedIn. Feel free to send me a connection request there. And you could also check out our website, Privatize, P-R-I-V-A-T-I-S-E.com. So it's Privatize with an S, the UK spelling. And you could also look us up, Privatize on LinkedIn, and you know, feel free to follow us.
All right, so that's really amazing, and thank you so much, Rafi. You know, I did not even feel like we spent more than 30 minutes. I was so involved in listening to everything that you said, and there's been a lot of takeaways that I would like to go back and listen and re-listen to. So thank you so much for giving your time and spending time with us.
Thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to this being, you know, one of the top podcasts for marketing. I think it already is, even bigger than it already is. So you said about the unicorn, so you're hearing it from me about Yag's podcast. So
that's so kind of you, and thank you so much. So for our listeners, that's that from us in this episode. And until we connect with you the next time with another guest and another topic, this is bye from me, Yag. Have a good day and take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.